to different groups and businesses that are supporting No on Measure M, and why you think it is that all of these groups are coming out in support?
These groups are coming out. I mean, first and foremost, I mean, the number one, this conversation should have ended at the Wiat tribe want the statue gone, right? So they're our number one endorser, and they've been in support of this since we started talking about all this. This is Wiat land. It has been for thousands of years. And if we respect them, which they don't, haven't had of historically, you can look all the way up into this point, they've had no voice. No voice. And this is the first time that the Arcata City Council has reached out to them about this ever. They've said their opinion. And why did we reach out to them and ask them what their opinion is if we have no intention of caring about it, right? The Yurok tribe as well. The Cherai Ancestral Society. There's like veterans for peace.
I can jump in here, Eric.
Please.
Yeah. Veterans for Peace, NAACP, True North Organizing Network, We Are Your Community, North Coast People's Alliance, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, Humboldt, the Social Action Committee of the Humboldt Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, Move to Amend, Bay Area Coalition for the Headwaters, Raging Grannies of Humboldt, the Green Party, Show Up Humboldt, Friends of the Eel River, Humboldt and Dernier County's Central Labor Council of the AFL-CIO, the Buddhist for Peace Fellowship, Save the Matola's Ancient Forest, Sweet Fields, People's Records, the North Coast Co-op, Beachcomber Cafe, Humboldt Bay Social Club, the list goes on and on and on, both organizations, religious organizations, and private businesses.
Well, Eric has said consistently that the citizens of Arcata effectively have no right to make this decision, that this is a decision purely by the Wiat tribe, and that, in effect, that our government is illegitimate and has no right to make decisions like this and is represented by the people of Arcata, and only the Wiats have that right.
I have not said that whatsoever. What I've said is that it is our responsibility to honor when we go on Indigenous people's land that's been their land for thousands of years. It is our duty as a guest, even me, a California Native American, I am a guest on this land. And it is my respect and honor that I should be giving to the Wiat people to acknowledge that in all my ways, how is it affecting the Wiat people? Is what I'm doing supporting them? Is it in line with what they would want me to do? I am here because I have heard from them multiple times that this is offensive to them, particularly George Zinder's name on that statue, particularly what McKinley did to the Cherokee. Their statement stated that what he did to the Cherokee, the Choctaw, the Creek, and the Seminole, and the Chickasaw was terrible. And they also mentioned in the Wiat statement about how the Ojibwe reached out to McKinley and asked them to stop the settlers from coming in and decimating the Ojibwe's forest. And he did not respond to them. Just as the founders of the NAACP, you call McKinley an abolitionist, but as president, the NAACP founders, what was originally the Colored People of Massachusetts, wrote a letter to McKinley, and they stated that why are you remaining silent on the brutalization and savagery of our people by the white community?
Well, they had no hope of the Democratic Party because the Republican Party was the only place they saw of being any hope at all.
But yet McKinley did nothing about the 3,500 mass lynchings that have taken place by the KKK. He did not a single member. They pointed out that not a single member of the cabinet opened their lips to say anything about the lynchings of the now freed. They said, "We may be black, sir, but we are Americans and we are citizens." And that's what they said to McKinley, the strong abolitionist who said nothing about mass.
Well, that's why he lost a lot of
support. We had a racist apartheid regime that had taken back power in the South and was led by the very racist Democratic Party. The majority of African Americans continued to vote for the Republican Party until the 1950s because they knew the racist basis of the Democratic Party.
But not in the same numbers that they did in his first election. In his second election, they didn't come out in those numbers. And a lot of it was because there was a term for what was used for when you put like your friends, like regionalists in positions, and there was too many of those. And actually, African American groups said that he disavowed them by the time his second administration that he comes out, and he had lost a lot of support by then.
But I would like to say that McKinley's mouth has opened in a certain way in this statue by giving everybody an education. You know, I know a lot of web browsers have opened, a lot of dusty history books have opened, because more people now know about the atrocities and they know about the brutal history, which they probably knew before that, but...
It's a good point, Lisa. The only reason people know about this is because we diligently followed all the rules.
Okay,
in the books,
so say he wasn't there. People. How else would you be educating people?
If he wasn't there?
Yeah, like how else would you bring this to light, and how else would you try to get rectification for what had happened? Like, how would you educate people to their wrongs, my wrongs, because my ancestors did this, so that now I'm vilified for it? So how would you go about teaching people about your history?
I don't think you need to be as concerned about the actions of your ancestors. I think you're answerable, Lisa, for your actions right now.
Yeah.
You know, you have a voice, you have a vote, you have a forum here on the public radio station. There's people listening in from home. And I guess I'm confused about your confusion about how to move forward, given all the vast amount of evidence in front of you, and you say you still don't know what to do.
I do know what to do. I will vote yes on Measure M, and I will try to preserve my history, because I feel like the slippery slope comes up time and time again, but nobody can give me an answer. Where does it end? So my history is obviously not important. You've told me that, because it's not thousands of years old. So my history is irrelevant. When I try to express my desire to keep my history, I'm laughed at or vilified. And so I want to know, where does it end? I'm voting yes, because it's the first foothold I feel I'm losing in my culture and my history, just like all the other monuments in town that identify me and my history. So I'm just wondering, when the statue comes down, where will that stop? We'll keep changing street names or tearing buildings down, and then the white man can never, I feel like we can never do anything to take away what we had done. So going forward, what do we do? How do we live together? How do we remain peaceful with each other and represent each other's histories and cultures respectfully?
Well, maybe one of our callers has that. We've got five of them on the line. So, Robert, you're first. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Hello. Yes, I live in Arcata, and I have been to the city council meetings. I spoke for a no on M. I'm with Veterans for Peace. It's important to me to have McKinley removed from the plaza and put in what I see a historical. Now, we talk about common ground. Well, I would not be opposed to him being put like over at a local history museum. But the center of the plaza is a place, the very center of Arcata is a place that of honoring. Now, I do not demonize President McKinley. I think he had some good merits to his good, that he was an abolitionist and that he fought for the Union Army. But he also was responsible for imperialism and colonialism. And specifically, after the first Hawaii was colonized and overthrown and annexed, he actually is quoted as saying, "It's manifest destiny." That's a quote of his. The Philippine War was one of the most horrific wars we ever had. Right? It lasted a long, long time, one of the longest wars. And the estimates range from 500,000 to 1.4 million Filipinos killed in that war. McKinley had the option when they were just about to get rid of the Spanish Empire They thought that they were going to help. We were going to help them become a republic, just like we are. That's what they wanted. They wanted freedom, a republic. And instead, Mr. McKinley said the Filipinos were unfit for governing themselves. And we therefore annexed them, and therefore all those people were killed for just wanting a republic like we had, for just wanting freedom. That's why I would like the statue of McKinley moved to a museum away from the city plaza. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call.
Thanks for your call. Going back to another quote by Emilio Aguinaldo, who is United States, a little-known figure, but he was the Filipino Tom Jefferson. He said, quote, "The form of government will be like that of the United States of America, founded upon the most rigid principles of liberty, fraternity, and equality." And unfortunately, he could not have been more wrong in that prediction. He thought he would receive help, and he would help the United States defeat the Spanish, and then the Philippines would go on to control their own territory and destiny as a nation, and they ended up under a brutal colonial occupation where water torture, mass executions, shared murder of children, documented rape, concentration camps was all forced upon them by the United States Army. And I hate to bring this like super negative energy to the conversation when I think the real conversation should be how we can make Arcata better, how we can open up the plaza for the possibility of the future. But I think when people get so emotional talking about why they want McKinley to come down, it's hard not to be emotional when you have been exposed to these histories and you know what happened and you've read the quotes from U.S. soldiers. New York Evening Post during the Philippine War, one of their journalists, H.L. Wells, said, "There's no question that our men do, quote, shoot N-words somewhat in the sporting spirit." And there's, it's those things that come from the deepest, darkest, most brutal, vicious, savage aspects of humanity. And you have a statue of the man that sent those men there to do those things. It's hard not to be emotional.
I'd like to continue to say that what he did there did not stop there, right? Now, granted, this is an emotional subject for me because my great-great-grandfather, Joseph Santos, had his family so in fear of the naval commander of McKinley's illegalizing their religions and doing horrible atrocities to them that they put him on a stowaway fishing boat so that he could come to Jenner, California, right? So this is my family, right? And what McKinley did not stop there. Today, Puerto Rico does not have representation in this government, not representation that has helped them in any way. They've had thousands of people die because of Hurricane Maria and because of their quasi-American territory status. They don't have anything. Guam, where my great-grandfather came from, is a non-self-governing American territory. They don't have a single senator. They don't have a single congressman. They are colonized and ran by this government with absolutely no voice whatsoever. Just like the Wiat people have had no voice whatsoever right here in Arcata, my people over in Guam have no voice whatsoever. And that's because of President William McKinley, and that's happening right now. Right now.
Over time, their great friendship developed between the people of the Philippines and the United States. In World War II, when the Japanese claimed that they were going to be liberating the Philippines, that the Filipinos fought on the American side. And Americans promised that the Philippines would be independent, originally scheduled for early 1940s when the United States defeated Japan in World War II. Philippines was promptly given independence, and we've had a strong, positive relationship with the
Philippines. Since 1946. Yeah.
Ever since then.
I'd like to read it. Go ahead.
Oh, the As you mentioned, the rebellion had been going on under Spain, but continued under the United States. And unfortunately, in that era, that the large powers were not allowing small countries to be independent. That's certainly not something that is good, but certainly a fact of life that existed at that time in history.
Cuba escaped.
So why do we still have? So why are we? Why would we still want to honor a man that came from that time period and had that kind of impact on people who wanted nothing more than their independence and the ability to control their own lives and destinies, to speak their own languages, to practice their own religion, just to live like you and I do?
Well, if we look at somebody from my era, John Kennedy, who was president of the United States, who generally is very strongly honored, you know, but people recognized he was a hero of World War II with PT-109. He was injured in World War II. He started the Peace Corps. He eventually became a strong leader of the civil rights movement, but at the same time, he was a critical person in helping start the Vietnam War. So I think that, and you know, like McKinley, he also was assassinated by a radical,
anarchist,
a steel worker who got laid off during the recession that he presided over.
So anyway,
a really terrible president on economics.
Kennedy is honored, and I think that William McKinley has his pluses, being an abolitionist. And his minuses in letting the war for the liberation of Cuba expand into the Philippines and into other areas. So I think that what we need to do is to not subtract from history. What I would like to see is keep the statue, have an interpretive plaque explaining the full history of McKinley, and then at the choice of indigenous people in this area, have displays on the plaza talking about what they suffered and the accomplishments that they contributed to this area long before anybody of European descent came to this area. And I think that's the best way to honor people, is to tell the full story. And I think that having William McKinley there is part of the full story that we should continue.
I think
except
that's
for that
really,
story
go ahead,
really has nothing to do with Arcata. McKinley never came to Humboldt County. He never set foot here. He didn't. His policies really didn't affect anybody here locally, and it's kind of an odd historical accident that we're even having this discussion today in the first place.
Well, in my time, as I said, with John Kennedy being assassinated, people were horrified at that a president could be murdered. And I think that people in McKinley's time felt a very similar way, that you know, the United States had come out of recession. He was a popular president, and suddenly an anarchist murders him. And I think,
but he was also not without his detractors.
And it's
as John Kennedy has his detractors, who I remember very well. I remember from the newspaper cover of November 22nd, 1963, the day that Kennedy was assassinated, how many negative things were being said about John Kennedy at that time. But when he was assassinated, that people put those things aside and looked at the positive things of President Kennedy. And I think that a very similar process happened with William McKinley, that people in their horror in many cities throughout the United States felt that they needed to honor this man and respect this man. And I think that people felt that way in Arcata and in many other communities throughout the U.S. and wanted to erect statues in his honor, and they did.
Now we have some more callers. Dave from Arcata, are you on the line?
I am.
Welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Thank you. I think the first thing I want to say is that it seems the real import here is that in the middle of our square stands a statue, and that statue is William McKinley. And if we had a dozen statues around the city, it wouldn't really make any difference if McKinley was one of them. But the fact that we have a statue in the center of our square, that symbolizes who we are as Arcadians. And I don't think we want to be McKinley. Because McKinley, despite what the people... I mean, I'm just amazed that... Michael Winkler and other people are coming out and somehow, as progressive people, they're coming forward and acting as if somehow McKinley was a progressive. McKinley was a corporatist. Mm-hmm. McKinley was an imperialist. He said specifically that regarding the natives of the Philippines, I resolved that we must not leave them to themselves. They are unfit for self-government, and they would soon have anarchy and misrule over there.
Which they do right now with the very...
to do but take them all and educate the Filipinos and uplift and civilize and Christianize them. I mean, this man was not a progressive. This man defeated the populist opponent in 1896.
Who relied on the racist votes of the Southeast to have any chance whatsoever.
And furthermore, although he made all sorts of promises to the black people of the South, he didn't fulfill those promises. And lynchings and racist actions and lack of representation continued throughout his regime, which was continually protested by the black people of America. And so, but the main thing I want to say is that this man is not a symbol of who we as Arcadians want to be, and he stands in the center of our square.
Which is why I think we should add to what we have on the plaza.
And it's time for him to leave.
I'd like to add for that statue, they were not horrified by the slaves in the Jacoby storehouse. They were not horrified by the Liptos, by the Prestons, by the several slave owners that owned slaves during that time. They were not horrified by McKinley's army killing every male Filipino boy over the age of 10. They were not horrified by these things. And the reason that is because colonialism, that idea of manifest destiny, removed my people's humanity. We did not have the right to vote. We did not have the right to bear arms. We weren't considered citizens of this country until 1924. And we weren't able to practice our religions until 1978.
And it's amazing with that statue in the middle of our town square that we aren't still like that. We have progressed. We are civilized, and we live together now.
Are we? Because the Wiat tribe's asking you to remove the statue, and you're saying that your history is more important than our suffering
history.
To have to stare at somebody that just was so brutal to us.
It's equally important.
And the question is, do we want William McKinley to be a symbol of Arcata?
Well, you have made him a symbol, even though he isn't.
The whole town's a symbol of white man taking over the land.
No. Do we want William McKinley to be the symbol in the middle of our town square of Arcata?
You mean the man from Canton, Ohio? which happens to be the NFL Hall of Fame, by the way, anyway.
I mean, if we want to honor the people,
what
about all of the buildings erected by the white men? They're all jewels in a crown that sit on the head of the town, and it's all representative of what you are condemning, which is white man's settlement on this land.
No, not you.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at Eric, and I'm sorry. I'm speaking.
No, I'm talking to you, and I'm saying, do we want William McKinley to be the symbol for people who come to our town of what our town stands for? A man who participated in genocide against the people of the Philippines, a man who did not follow through on his promises to the black people of the South.
I want
do
all
we
the
want
monuments.
This man, do we want this man to be the symbol of our town, or do we want a symbol that represents what our area is, what our environment is, and what it has been throughout history, which is represented by the Wiat people and by the people who originally settled this land.
And how much money are we willing to spend to do that? I mean, are we willing to spend
$65,000?
Let's not get the money into this. I want to thank you for your call, Dave, because we have a lot more callers, so I want to thank you so much and for the question that you've asked. Lisa, do you have an answer to that question? Because he asked you specifically.
What?
Do you want that... Is this man from Canton, Ohio, who happened to get to Arcata over 112 years
right,
ago
right.
As a symbol of Arcata?
I don't see him as a symbol of Arcata personally. So I see all the monuments in my town that represent my personal history here as monuments to my history. So I don't know what symbol we would put up that would represent fairly everybody's history here, but I feel like by my saying McKinley's there as a monument and I want him to stay there as a monument doesn't mean I want the Wiat people to continually feel like they're extinct. I want their culture represented. I want to learn more about that.
How do you see that happening?
I don't know. I would like them to tell me, because honestly, I don't know as much about their culture as they do. So teach me, you know, but
they've told you one thing, that they want the statue removed, and your response has been, my history, my culture.
Is that a teaching moment?
Well,
is that where you're calling a teaching moment?
I'm not trying to sound like my culture is the only one that's important, but I am trying to say that in taking away the statue, what will be next? How will the Wiat people see it as a slippery slope? I see it as a slippery slope, and no one gives me the answer where the bottom of the slope is. So I'd like to know, yes, because I do feel threatened that my history will become erased. So I do. Lewis touched on that, and I do feel that.
There's these wonderful things called history books. And when you open them up, you can read about
this. Not everyone's represented in that. You know that now. You know that well.
But we're going to change those too, because we've been eliminated.
That does reflect all of us.
How about this? If you want to talk about erasing history,
I don't. I'm wondering what we can put on the plaza that represents all of us.
What about us? What about the names of our rivers and our streams?
What can we put on the plaza? Every time I've asked you, you don't answer the question.
It's not my choice, because this is Wiat land.
I know, and you got to this table and introduced yourself as a representative of the Wiat people, so I feel like I should ask you.
Okay, well then you don't know much about the Wiat people. I am here as a representative of Nuwan Measure M.
So what if the Wiat people told you they would like to see on the plaza?
They wrote it in an article for everyone who wants to get on
the
internet.
Just like those history books that we open up and read all the time. I didn't read it, so can you tell me?
Yeah, they said they would like to see that statue removed.
Yes.
And then something be placed there to honor them. That is for them, not you.
No, I know. I'm asking them because you're their spokesperson, so I would assume.
I am not the spokesperson for the Wiat tribe. I'm not the spokesperson for every Native American.
I thought you said you
were. Earlier you said you were.
Yeah, I know.
Earlier you said you were.
So I'm just asking you because you're representing.
No on Measure M committee.
No, you said you represent all Native Americans.
I did not say that.
All right,
but that's typical of white people, though, I just want to say.
Anytime a Native American shows up,
it's like this is the ambassador of all Native people on the globe, right? I am here based on community organizing that has been done with over 60 organizations, that has been done with the indigenous people of this continent, of this land. I am here as a member of this movement of many people saying that they don't want a statue of William McKinley, a child killer of the Filipinos, we have the litany, we've had it a lot.
I think, though, that your anger is not only toward McKinley, but to white people. And that's what scares me. So when I let go of a piece of my history, the rest of it's going to follow. I know it.
Lisa,
so
I hear what you're saying. Hold on, Lewis. I hear what you're saying. Yeah. What I want to interject here, though, is that this is a conversation about deciding if the statue is going to be up or if the statue is going to be down. I didn't think that this is really a conversation of what we do when the statue is down. I think that's another show.
Okay.
So to keep asking that from various sides, we don't have the answer.
I guess that's part of what I needed to know.
I hear what you're saying, and
the slope
and that's
is slipping. I'd like to know what's at the bottom.
It's a bigger conversation, and yeah. I think that this show and the conversation and the flyers. And you're knocking door to door opens that all up. Sometimes, you know, we don't want to hear what we're hearing, but it still opens it up, and that's a good thing. So speaking of opening up, Pam from Arcata, are you still on the line?
I believe so. Why don't we get Lewis on real quick, because he was about to say something. Lewis, do you have...
Just a comment for Lisa, that we're coming at this from really different places. And when I share a little bit about these histories that I have the privilege to read about and to know about, even though they're not directly related to my family's history. That is a tremendous responsibility that I take very seriously, trying to share and represent these histories in a good way that produces positive change. And these histories span continents, span oceans, span cultures, and from the literally all over the world. And there's multiple histories and multiple angles to all these things. And so far, Lisa, you've only talked about yourself. It's all about you. And I encourage anybody listening to this to go back and listen to the recording of this entire program.
But and, I am here representing and myself, true. And Eric's representing himself, or the Measure M, and we're all representing our point of view, so it's only natural that I would be talking about mine. So it's
but
not egocentric.
What I'm saying is not about me, and you are only talking about you.
I am talking about what's important to me, and I also feel like I'm a voice for people who feel oppressed that cannot speak because they feel intimidated. You can shake your head. Eric's shaking his head like that's not true, but there are so many people that I have encountered that have expressed my same feeling. They cannot speak out, or they get a target on their back, and it is the truth. Deny it or not, it is the truth.
The we are people are not being honored here.
I'm not denying that, but neither am I, so I'm not denying it.
You have an opportunity to acknowledge what do the we are people want.
I don't know. You won't tell me.
But what do the people want?
Well, they
to
want
have
the statue to come down.
Why
I
do they want
that.
The statue down?
Because they feel oppressed by it. But in technicality,
how did they feel oppressed by it?
Because he represented the demolition of a lot of people.
Right. So how does that statue specifically affect the Wiat people?
How does the whole town specifically affect
We're
the Wiat people?
We're talking about the statue.
We're talking
how does
about
that statue
the
affect
town
the
that
people?
Buildings are built on. It's all the land of the Wiat people, but it's now inhabited by buildings built and owned
statue,
by white men.
And we're talking about legislation.
But it's one monument. There are hundreds and there are thousands of monuments in this town. So one monument comes down, but there are a lot of other monuments that also represent the oppression of the Wiat people. So where does it stop?
How does that monument affect the Wiat people?
You've told us today many times.
Did you hear me?
I did hear you.
And what did I say?
You said that it... Oh, my gosh, there's a lot to repeat. Mm-hmm. But, yeah,
what specifically about that statue that makes
it's oppressive?
People? Because?
Because William McKinley was a capitalist, an expansionist, a murderer, a white man,
that's what you're
imperialist... Hearing.
Okay,
what am I missing?
I think she passed the test. Can we go to Pam now in Arcata?
Yeah, thanks.
All right, Pamela.
Wow. This has been really great. I have a question that's very specific about the statue. First, I want to say to Lisa, thank you for, being really open with Eric just now. I'm old, I'm white, and I live in Arcata, and I've been to the meetings, and I just want to dispel the myth to all the listeners that was not, there's never been a mob, and there's nothing to be afraid of. People simply spoke their piece. So anybody listening, please don't buy into what Winkler is saying about that. To you, Lisa, I want to say a friend of mine just turned me on to a book last week called White Fragility. It's a really, really good book for white people. I'm white. To read, I think you'd really like it. I'd be happy to sit down with you and have a cup of coffee and talk about that book. It's not easy reading, but it's called White Fragility, and to any of the listeners. Now, here's my question, because I really don't understand this. For me, the statue being moved isn't about erasing history. So what is it about moving it to another place that somehow feels like that's erasing history? Because I don't understand that.
Well, out of sight, out of mind, something becoming less important. But anyway, to
Michael,
me...
Michael, what makes you think it would be out of sight?
Well, people have talked about moving it to the Veterans Hall, but if we look at how much land that was occupied by the Wiat people or the Yuroks or the Krok or all the different tribes, where would you put it that wouldn't offend them because it's on their land, so...
Well, I mean, I don't want you to ask me questions. You can. I just want to know why moving any object that one values to a different location. People move homes all the time. They lift them up and move them because they want a different piece of land. It would still be there. What is it that about that is about losing a piece of history? Because he's still there. That statue's going to be somewhere.
Well, for one thing, is this worth $65,000? Is this worth $300,000? Is this worth $500,000? Rather than what I would prefer, which is to add additional displays that the Wiat tribe would like to add, or that other tribes would like to add, that can explain their history in their own terms.
You aren't answering the question. Why can't it be moved someplace else? And you know very well, according to the city, that there is someone who already wants to help make this happen. So when you keep quoting these huge, ridiculous figures about the cost, you know it's not accurate.
Well, the person who had, according to Karen Deemer and according to one of the city council members who talked to this person wants the statue to stay exactly where it is. But if the vote goes to remove it, only in that case would this person pay for it to be moved. But this person greatly would prefer, according to the people that I've talked to keep the statue exactly where it is. So I think the argument that this person's going to put up money is somehow a vote for moving the statue. It's actually this person wants the opposite. They want the statue to stay.
And until the money's in a bank account, it's hard to say it's funded.
You just validated what we all knew, and you've been driving us crazy not acknowledging it. There is someone who's going to pay if we vote to remove the statue and move it. So that wipes out this whole discussion about it costing money. Thank you so much.
Not at all, because the money is not in an escrow account. I mean, promise talk is cheap. Fire Phoenix had these flyers up about, oh, we're going to raise money. It's going to pay for all of it. I haven't seen a cent coming from that fund. I haven't seen anything going into an escrow account. I haven't seen a cent going from this person who's talked to the city manager. So it's all phantom until money is in an account and is locked up.
Can I ask a question of how it would proceed? All right. We're, what, about less than 3 weeks from the election. So if people vote for the statue to be removed, what happens after that? How is that process move forward?
So there's a CEQA process that's in place right now.
In Michael Winkler's letter to David LaRue,
he said, I would suggest organizing a group meeting with the attorney and filing for a request for a temporary injunction to temporarily stop the process under CEQA, right?
So California Environmental Quality Act.
That's the environmental.
Well, that became unnecessary because we've reached the point that the statue hasn't been moved, the EIR hasn't been made, and we're going to have a vote, which is what my goal was, so that the citizens of Arcata would make the decision.
So you didn't want them to actually know what the actual costs were going to be and what the actual environmental impact was going to be. You wanted to be able to inflate these numbers, just like the literature that's lying going around saying that you can add a plaque when in fact you can't add a plaque.
You can put a plaque next to it.
You're abusing your authority to go around and say that it's the black community's fault that the chief resigned, that people are a lynch mob, and that obviously whoever messed with the statue was part of no one in. You just have the authority to just say whatever you want, whenever you want, because the ethics code is self-governing, and there's nobody that will hold you accountable except for the people of Arcata. And if they find that your ethics code's violations are totally uncalled for and really just abusive, the only way that anybody can hold you accountable is to recall you.
I personally would like to thank Michael Winkler for giving me a voice and giving the people that don't have a voice. So I appreciate that he brought this to fruition, and I'm not afraid to say it.
You're happy you violated all those ethics codes?
I don't really give a darn because
that's right.
I would rather have a voice. I apologize. I caught myself, but I would rather have a voice, and he gave it to me, and I respect him for that, and I appreciate that.
I felt that the behavior at the February 21st meeting was so out of line and so threatening and so undemocratic that I felt that I was willing to be recalled. The February 21st meeting was so out of line and so threatening and so undemocratic that I felt that I was willing to be recalled and lose my office to stand up against what I thought was an overwhelmingly threatening, undemocratic process. Right. And if people wanted to recall me over that, they were welcome to do so.
That's their prerogative.
If people
isn't
wanted
it?
To call for my censure, they were welcome to do so. I felt that this is an important moral issue that I had to take a very definite stand on, and I did, and I knew that I was going to take a lot of heat for doing that, and I was ready to do that, and I have.
Now, getting back to the question I asked, though, in regards to, okay, you're going to have an ERR, you're going to have a CEQA, and then what would happen? Would it be, since you're putting it to the voters, to the community, to vote if this statute stays or not, who does it go to where the statute would go?
Well, for one thing, this would need to go to the Planning Commission to have a hearing on the environmental impact report.
I said, okay, post-EIR, post-CEQA. Okay, post planning commission.
That would be on the agenda of the city council, where there would be hearings, and then we would look into what the alternatives were, what the cost would be for various different alternatives, and there would be hearings, and then the city council would make a decision public hearing, community feedback, to make the decision on what would happen if the vote is to keep the statue. Then what we would do is discuss what other modifications that we might make, what else we could add to the plaza.
So there will still be time for community input into regardless of whatever the vote is.
Whether the
happen.
Vote is to keep the statue or the vote is to remove the statue, there will be hearings and there'll be opportunity for community dialogue on what we want to do. The only thing that would happen is if it passes, the statue can't be moved till when and if there's another ballot measure that reversed the original ballot measure.
Right, and until that time, that initiative says that you cannot make modifications. Yet people are sending around this flyering neighborhoods saying that you want to keep the statue and make modifications, which is a lie.
Yeah,
that's so not what the
if you put something
says.
Next to the statue, but do not modify
no,
the statue.
No, it said its base. It says not to be removed, destroyed, or modified. The statue, its base.
Well, the base is just
the
granite pillar, so anything next to it would not be considered part of the base for the statue. So if something were adjacent to it but not attached to the base of the statue, that would not contradict the language of the ballot measure.
Okay, if we have any more callers?
I'm here.
All righty, you're welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, I too was at the Arcata City Council meeting, and it was not a mob, and it's deeply insulting to people who have faced and continue to face real violence in Arcata. I'm calling to say that I am a proud Armenian, and I treasure my heritage. The sculptor was Armenian and narrowly missed the Armenian genocide. I am more than willing to sacrifice that piece of my heritage to respect the Wiat Tribal Council's greater right to oppose the statue. I also want to say that it's not accurate to say that disagreement with McKinley and imperialism and manifest destiny is only a new thing. The Filipino people, whom McKinley described as unfit for self-government, launched an intensive effort to defend their right to self-governance. His violent crushing of the Philippine resistance is a profoundly shameful chapter of our history that is ignored in our textbooks and certainly not acknowledged by the statute. Mark Twain co-founded the Anti-Imperialist League in response to what McKinley did. He and many other Americans and Filipinos staunchly opposed McKinley in his time and his launching us into this imperialist venture. Defenders of the McKinley statue keep saying that we have to honor our history. There are better ways to honor and to learn our complex history than this statue. People can attend the Campus and Community Dialogue on Race events that are coming up starting October 29th at Humboldt State University. People can join the NAACP. They can take part in Equity Arcata. There are so many ways to learn and understand our history and to work for mutual understanding that is not honoring the statue, which it's time for us to honor our history and move into the 21st century.
Thank you for mentioning Mark Twain and the Anti-Imperialist League. One of my favorite quotes from him in 1901, he writes, "And as for the flag of the Philippine province, it is easily arranged. We can have a special one. Our states do it. We can have our usual flag with the white stripes painted black and the stars replaced by the skull and crossbones."
Ooh.
From Mark Twain.
I know.
I would like to say a couple things. One is that one thing that disturbs me is that I put up a sign of within a block of where I live. So would I ask the people who support the no on M is to leave our campaign material alone. Do not touch our signs. Do not touch any of our other material. We do not, that I will, to the extent that I can, I will make sure that people in our group do not modify or make it, remove or do anything else against any signs that are, that say no on M. And I would ask people with it. The other thing I'd like to say is that there's a very strong editorial in the Mad River Union this week that very strongly supports yes on M. And I urge people to read that and understand the arguments that that says it better than I could. And I think it's a very,
very
strong editorial.
How many lives is that editorial worth? Is the question the voters of Arcata will have to decide on November 6th.
We'll let them read it and decide.
Right. Let them read it and decide. Also, you can go to cityofarcata.org to view the arguments in support or opposition, too. Also, you can go to KHSU archives to listen to the show again or to share it with people who you might want to.
Yeah, please go to nomckinley.com. Mm-hmm. And see the 62 endorsers and see the multiple statements that all of them have made. Please take the time to read all that.
And you can also visit Yes on M. There's a lot of people
dot
on
com,
there.
Same kind of thing.
Facebook page,
Facebook
Yes on M.
Page,
Facebook.
Yes on M.
Face Brutti, as I like to call her.
HistoricJusticeAlliance.org. HistoricJusticeAlliance.org. If you go there, you will see in great detail many, many, many of the genuine truths that people are so uncomfortable. The fact that removing the statue is so threatening. I mean, just read the history. Just really go and read it and find out about all the millions of deaths and the 90 million acres that were taken from indigenous people and the manifest. Just go read about it. And when you're done really learning, please vote no on Measure M and help us honor and respect the Wiat people's decision.
And Keenan, I believe you will be the last caller. Keenan, are you on the line?
I sure am.
All righty. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Yeah, thanks. And first off, I want to say thanks to everyone that's sharing their views.
You're breaking up here. Are you on your cell phone?
Any better?
Yeah, keep talking.
Okay, I'll keep going.
I think you have your radio on, so turn your radio off, please.
Okay.
Yeah, turn your radio off, and then you won't be confused, and you can just talk.
Okay, so I kind of want to, I'd really like it if everyone, a panel member, had the opportunity to voice the distinction that they see between kind of a personally held racial animus, like a personal racism, and systemic racism, and how they understand that term.
Well, the way I would put it is personal racism is that if a person thinks that people that they identify as other ethnic groups as being inferior to their own group and treat them in different and negative ways, that would be personal racism. That institutional racism is that things are set up in a society so that are largely invisible, so that just the normal automatic way that society operates devalues and handicaps people of different ethnic groups, and that everything can look normal on the surface. It can look like there's no prejudice, there's no explicit bad treatment, but the end result, because of these built-in institutional practices, consistently disadvantages, undermines, devalues, or even results in people of other ethnic groups being murdered or jailed or treated in other ways intensely negative. And so within institutional racism, that individual people of the dominant group, in this case, the white group, can feel that they're unprejudiced, they're not doing anything wrong, and that the end result is the result of merit-based, and the people who are in white ethnic group just happen to do better economically because they work harder and they're more industrious, and that all the pillars within society and all the practices in with society that disadvantage people of other ethnic groups become invisible to them, and so that those people don't have to feel guilty because it's like, you know, I'm not prejudiced, and all those things work to the disadvantage of people of ethnic groups that are treated as being subordinate and are treated as being of less value.
Can you get your answer?
He wants to hear from all of
us. Yeah, well, I was interested in hearing everyone's, but yeah, that was, I mean, okay. Thank you for sharing that.
I'm going to let you go next because okay. I have to formulate my
answer. Personal racism is believing that your race or a race that you deem is superior to others. I mean, America has just given us example after example after example of what that is. Manifest Destiny is a perfect example of that. Systematic racism is when you codify that into law, like with the one drop rules. African Americans, Native Americans, one drop, no rights, no voting, no land ownership. Like the laws here in California when McKinley was president. Somebody here claimed that somebody said they're threatened to scalp somebody.
We didn't
something.
Claim it. The person that was told that told us. So
somebody
who
knows this.
If this
was 1860, that person, you or whoever it was, mm-hmm. if you had white skin, would have been able to say, this person threatened me, mm-hmm. and the law would proceed. They would take him to that native person to court. That person would not be able to testify against any white person or say a word. They would sentence him, and they would be auctioned within 48 hours. There's an example of systemic racism that happened right here in California. Or let's talk about modern times. Like when the Dollar General goes to the Mississippi Choctaw Reservation and sets up a Dollar General, and then their manager molests a 13-year-old boy, and then they refuse to show up in tribal court because the law says that no white person can be tried on tribal lands, right? So today, this systemic racism exists. The Dollar General fought it all the way to the Supreme Court and spent hundreds of thousands of dollars so that they wouldn't have to be tried in tribal court, which the law says they don't have to. So they fought it to the Supreme Court over this child molestation case. You know, thankfully, the Supreme Court was split on it, and they're going to have to face their day in the tribal court. But that's the first time in American history, right? You can walk up on the reservation right now and just punch somebody in the face as a white person, and they can't try you for it, right? Only now, because of this court case, if it's a business that has a contract with the tribal government, that's for the first time in American history, in these last couple years, can a tribal court try a non-native anything on their own lands. There's a really good example of systemic racism.
Lois, you want to answer this?
Yeah, the question is examples of personal and systemic racism. Is that the question?
Yes.
Caller?
He's no longer on the line, but keep going.
Okay. When we're talking about race and culture, especially when it has to do with colonized peoples, I think to this day, to most of Americans, and I could say that because I used to be uneducated about all kinds of tribal histories and cultures. I think there's the sense that they're like American, they're the hyphen Americans, right? Something else and American, but essentially we're all the same. You know, we're all really one people. And I think that when there is no original consent to join the political body of the United States in the first place, whether it was through forced treaties due to asymmetrical warfare that were then broken, or whether tribes were given citizenship in 1924 and didn't even find out about it. A couple of years later, they never asked for it. They never had anything to do with that decision. They were just told. There's a sense now that, oh, they've just always been Americans. It's always that way. And in a lot of these cases, including in Hawaii, including in Guam, including in Puerto Rico, there was no consent to join the United States of America. So when people talk about these histories and they might come off with like some kind of anti-American sentiment, I think it's important for people to hear where they're coming from and realize that they never asked to be part of this. They were forced to be at a time when they were sick with disease that they'd never encountered before, when they were starving, when they were being hunted like animals. And again, I hate to make everything super negative, but I know these histories and I can't unknow them. So I think just in terms of systemic racism, I realize that's more of a cultural and a political kind of argument or line of thought as opposed to being racist, but I think it's all really ties in together in terms of systemic racism. In terms of individual racism, I'm not really sure. I guess people that, I don't know, that hear all the histories of things that were done to another people who didn't pose any threat to the United States or the health or safety or well-being of United States citizens and were brutalized and massacred and murdered and banned from being their essential selves of who they are, their own ability to practice their own religion, language, customs, dress. To be told those histories and then for those people to say, I don't care, I think that's racism on a very individual level.
And Lisa?
Well, my answer won't be quite as extensive. It'll probably be a little more simple and practical. But individual racism, from my perspective, is when you're judged based on the color of your skin and your ethnicity and not on who you are as a person. And systemic racism is when that spreads throughout a culture through sharing and talking and communicating with each other, then a whole culture can take on that that feeling of prejudice towards someone just based on the color of their skin. So it's not as elaborate. I'm not talking about as many atrocities and bad things that have happened throughout our history, but in my mind, it's a pretty simple thing. You're judging someone on their skin color, and that attitude gets spread among a community or group of people.
I want to thank Keenan, who's no longer on the line, for that question, because it kind of served as a final thoughts in a way. But we do have a couple minutes here, and I would like to give everyone at least 30 seconds for their final thoughts. Michael?
Well, I think that to me the question is about McKinley as an individual, his entire life, both the pluses and minuses from back in the days when he was a young man and an abolitionist to later years when he was elected president with a very strong outreach to a wide variety of people, including African Americans, and finally to the less desirable part when he let a justified war to liberate the people of Cuba expand to suppressing the independence of the people of the Philippines. But I think, like as I said with John Kennedy, that I think he should be looked at it as a whole and judged as a whole. And I think that we can accommodate a history that includes William McKinley, but it can also include displays and respect for Native Americans and other people of color who have contributed to our society even before European Americans arrived in this area. And so vote yes on him.
Lewis?
Yeah, it's up for the voters of Arcata to decide whether McKinley's actions were more important when he was a soldier or when he was the commander-in-chief of the armed forces sending soldiers to war against people who had no intention of harm on the United States of America. And I think, essentially some of the arguments that the Yes on M side is sharing officially amount to honoring McKinley as the MVP of of coffee boys, of the bestest barista of the Battle of Antietam. And I think those are really weak and trivial compared to what he did as president, as commander of the armed forces. And ending it on a positive note, I'm really excited for the future of Arcata, for the community to come together and finally, for the first time in 112 years, to have the opportunity to decide what they want in the middle of their town square. And that's a beautiful thing. That's a great opportunity for everybody.
Lisa? I would just like to thank Michael again for giving me a voice and the whole community of Arcata a voice and being able to vote in November. Vote yes on M if you so choose. Vote no if you so choose. But I'm not ashamed for wanting to keep my history alive and also honor the Native American people's history in doing so without undermining, I know, Lewis, my own. But it's just important to me to have a voice and to represent my history as being just as important as anybody else's.
And Eric, gotta be brief, okay. I know.
I just really want to thank the Wiat people for their exceptional resilience, their survival, their struggle, their suffering. I want to thank my people. I want to thank my great-grandfather for surviving brutal treatment at the hands of William McKinley. I want to thank the Cherokee, the Choctaw, the Creek, the Chickasaw, the Seminole, the Kiowa, the Comanche, the Wichita, the Apache, Taino Nation of Puerto Rico. I want to thank Chamorro from Guam. I want to thank all of our Filipino relatives, and I want to thank the Hawaiian people for surviving this brutal, racist, imperialist, wholesale killing of our people for 500 years to get to the point where we actually have a group of people living in the Wiat people's ancestral homeland that I believe on November 6th are going to honor and respect the Wiat people by voting no on Measure M. I want to thank everybody, all those peoples, and I want to thank the people of Arcata who I know are going to vote no on Measure M, because we're going to have a future, a better future, and only that future will be made through honoring the indigenous peoples of this continent that have survived and struggled so hard and faced racism every day till this day at Standing Rock, up in Kinder Morgan, the Klamath tribe, the LNG pipeline, the Pilgrim pipeline in with the Ramapo Lenape, all these people that are still facing cultural, ecological genocide, destroying of their water, the Navajo people whose water still poisoned by uranium mines. I want to thank you for surviving, struggling, and speaking your truth, even though it's been erased, even though the names of your towns have been erased, even though the name of your watersheds have been erased, your mountains have been erased. Thank you for your struggle and your survival. And I know that the people of Arcata are going to do the right thing on November 6th, and they're going to remove a statue of a notorious mass murdering child killer in William McKinley, and they're going to remove that whole base that has George Zender's name on it, a child slave trafficking person. I know that Arcata is going to do the right thing and vote no on Measure M, and we're going to have a better future because of it. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank my guests tonight, Michael Winkler, Lisa Morehouse, Lewis Gordon, and Eric Rydberg. I also want to thank Harlan Rain, who gave us this extra hour, our callers, our engineer Michael, and you, the listener. I won't be here again until the end of December, so until then, peace, Frog.
You've been listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Thanks to our host, Brenda Starr, and our guests, Lisa Morehouse, Eric Rydberg, Lewis Gordon, and Michael Winkler. We love to get feedback on our programs. Email thursdaynighttalk@khsu.org. Like our Facebook page, Thursday Night Talk on KHSU.